תגור שרוק אינונה ברושותן אדור קושו ניגים יערבית אינונה רישבית קימנה פת ביאלר פוצי גרים נקענק נניה פוצי אינויים נעירים מי
Hello and welcome to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford, Captain of the ULT, Executive Director of Ocean Research Project. Ocean Research Project is science, education, and exploration. I am currently sitting in the aft cabin of the boat. It's pouring rain outside, and we're in some fjord. Some fjord in northern Greenland. It might be called Barden Fjord. I really don't know. I look at my chart, and my chart doesn't really have any information about this particular fjord that I'm in. There's very little information on the charts, period, and it's somewhat irrelevant. So we are off Englefield Bredning at about 77 and a half north, about 30 miles from the town of Connach. And yeah, we're sitting here in the rain, waiting out some bad weather. The rain is coming down in sheets, and I'm not going to go outside and do my radio show out there because it's just way too nasty right now. But it's been nasty. It's been nasty a lot lately. So where we left off last week, it was supposed to blow 25, it blew 50, gusting 60 to 70, and had all this chaos related to the boat dragging anchor and everything getting wrapped around it. So, just as a recap, we anchored in a place we thought we had as good as protection as we could from the wind angle. And it was supposed to blow 25, it blew 50, we drug anchor. We were quickly pushed out into the deeper part of the fjord. It was very deep, so the anchor was sort of dangling uselessly below the boat. About 1,700 feet of CTD line, the line we use for lowering the probe, also blew off the back of the boat, and it was dragging everywhere. It was tangling in the anchor. It was tangling around the rudder. It was trying to wrap in the propeller, and it made for a bad situation. Now, across from the fjord, the way that we were getting blown was a bunch of rocks and a cliff. So, had the boat just get blown across the fjord, the boat would have been dashed against the rocks, or the cliff, or both. It would have been a really bad situation. So I think this sort of thing is worth giving a little more time to talk about sort of what to do, and I didn't have much time at the end of last episode. I sort of went over it quickly. So what do you do? What do you do? You're on anchor. It's supposed to blow something reasonable, 20 knots, 25 knots. It ends up being a storm. You end up getting pushed off your anchor. Things are going crazy. Things are going bad around you. You're heeling way over, from the wind. And you have lee shore that could potentially, you could lose the boat and everybody could potentially die. So what do you do? So for me, the first thing I'm going to try to do is, of course, turn the engine on and try to use the engine to motor back to more protected water, where you're going to have a little protection from the wind. You really want to minimize fetch. So you want to get as close to something, whichever direction the wind is coming out of. Get as close to that as you can so you have as little fetch as humanly possible. And therefore, you have the smallest wave action humanly possible. So if you can get within, 100 feet, which is pretty close. I mean, you're probably not going to be able to get that close. But, let's say 100 yards or 100 meters of a beach or something along there, or a cliff or mound of dirt or something like this. And that can act as a buffer. You're not going to have very big waves. It just, the whole sort of concept behind the size of waves has to do with the amount of fetch, the amount of distance between you and land and how much water is between you and land. So if you have 100 yards, 100 meters of fetch, 100 miles of fetch, obviously the waves are going to be much bigger in that 100 miles because the waves have a lot more time to build. I believe if you look at a Beaufort chart, the Beaufort scale, it stops at about 600 miles being like the maximum amount of fetch that really matters. Anything more than 600 miles, it doesn't really matter. They're only going to get so big. And also, how big a wave gets has to do with the various other factors like current, depth. So there's longevity. How long has the storm been blowing? Is it blowing 8 hours, 12 hours, has been blowing for 3 days. So it takes about 24 hours typically to get a fully matured sea, to really get the waves to the full size that they can reach. And of course it takes a lot of fetch also. But as I said, there's a lot of elements in that. So okay, you're sitting there, you're on anchor, you're somewhere remote, and you just got blown off your anchor. So I put the engine on, first thing you do, try to motor back, try to get that anchor up. That would be a very good idea. If you're alone, if you're single-handed, if there's some reason you can't get the anchor up, you know, it's actually not the end of the world, believe it or not. You can push your anchor, and this isn't the greatest thing to do, and I'm not promoting it in any real way, but you can do it. You can leave the anchor dangling, and you can head towards land, and you can sort of drag the anchor. The anchor might catch on something, of course, but you can sort of drag the anchor under the boat and then put it in neutral and come back on the boat. The wind will push you back and possibly the anchor will catch. It's also possible the anchor is going to catch on something when you're trying to push it forward. This is not the greatest idea because you can get the anchor wrapped around something that you're not going to be able to get it back up from. There's all sorts of potential issues that could happen. But in a worst case scenario, if you can't get your anchor back up, it's not the end of the world necessarily. And you just put it in gear, go forward, try to get back into shallower water, and it's possible your anchor might catch on something anyways. And that was the case the other day, is that when we finally did, I finally did get the CTD line back up, and it took a long time to get, you know, with the engine wide open at 3,000 RPM, it took a long time to get back. It wasn't very far, you know, like a quarter of a mile, like a half a kilometer. It took several hours to get that far, even with the engine wide open. And that was because the winds were so strong that they kept blowing the bow off. So they blow the bow off one way, they blow the bow off the other way, and you just make very slow headway. And sometimes you go backwards, and then you try to make it back up. Of course, once we got the CTD line in, the 1,700 feet of line behind the boat back on board, that made a big difference. But we didn't get the anchor up because my crew was so busy trying to get this 1,700 feet of line out of the water behind the boat that was slowing me down, that was wrapping around everything, that was threatening my propeller, that we just let the anchor dangle. And eventually we got into shallower water. We got into about 60 feet of water, I guess 20 meters or so, and it caught. As I was pushing the anchor forward with the boat, it caught on something. I felt it catch. I put it in neutral, and the boat backed down on the anchor, and we stayed right there. And we stayed there for the rest of the storm, and it was fine. And when we pulled the anchor, it was covered in black mud, and which was great, a great sign. That means the anchor really buried itself deep in the mud. Under that circumstance, it worked. And again, you know, I'm not a big fan of dragging anchors below the boat, but you can do it, and it can go pretty bad too. But in this scenario, we didn't really have a choice. So let's change the scenario a little bit. So you get blown off anchor, surprisingly strong winds you don't expect, and you turn your engine on, you put it wide open, you're trying to work your way back, and the engine overheats, or something wraps around your propeller, and your engine goes out, and you can no longer use your engine. All right, you got this lee shore, say about 30, 45 minutes behind you. In another 30 minutes, 45 minutes, you're going to be dashed up against a bunch of rocks, and you probably lose the boat, and maybe everybody dies. So it's a sailboat. put out a small scrap of sail. If you got a roller furling jib, whatever, put out a scrap. Now, this also depends on wind direction. It's going to be awfully hard to tack your way up into 60, 70 knots. Hopefully for you, the wind is not coming down the fjord from the mouth of the fjord or wherever you're at. It's a bad idea to trap yourself in any location. So if you know the winds are going to be blowing from a certain direction, you don't want that direction to be coming from the mouth, the opening of wherever it is you are, to the end. Ideally, you want it the other way around. In the case that I had, the winds were coming sort of across the fjord, so they would have been on my beam. Had I had my engine broke and I had to have sailed out of there, I would have had the winds on my beam, so I would have been able to do it. So don't trap yourself. Don't put yourself in a location where the wind is going to be blowing from the mouth, the opening of whatever it is, down into wherever you are, because you're not going to be able to tack your way out of that. So put your sails up and sail out of there. Now, sailing out of there, of course, you're going to wind up in deeper water. And that means you're going to have bigger wave action. And you might also have current. In our case, there's a pretty good current that runs in Englefjord. We'd have came out of this sort of unknown fjord. Might be called Barden. Actually, it was a different fjord than I'm in right now. It's the next fjord over. But anyways, we would have been coming out into Englefjord Bredning, which is a big fjord, 20 miles or so wide, 80 miles long, and there's a strong current running at a couple of knots. So if the wind was opposing this current, this is a situation where you get really, really nasty seas, really nasty wave action. And now, I mean, it's not ideal. I imagine we would have had very steep, relatively short waves, maybe 10 feet, 12 foot. I doubt it would be much bigger than that, but they would have been very steep and they would have been breaking. And I probably easily could have got something washed over the side of the boat. I don't know what, but you know, there have been a lot of breaking waves on a boat. It would have been very uncomfortable. It wouldn't have been a very good situation, but it would be infinitely better than being dashed up against the rocks. That's like the worst case scenario. So you just want to get out of there. The next step is you want to get out of the current. Now you're in Englefjord, or now you're out of wherever you were. You put up a little bit of sail, and you'd only want a tiny bit of sail up, because at 50 knots gusting 70, I mean, you're not going to want to put your mainsail up to any real level. I mean, a little scrap of jib would be best if you can use that to sail out of there. If you have to use a third reef in the main, then you can, although you might be pinned way over doing that. Or a storm trysail, which is also going to be, you know, that's if you're not set up and ready to use one, it takes some time to get it up, and under those conditions, it would be a nightmare trying to get it up. So the easiest thing to do is just roll out a little scrap of jib, and hopefully you can just use that to sail out to where you're going. Now for us, we would have sailed through this current, this nasty section. It would have got real bad. We'd have breaking waves on the boat. But eventually we would have got through that. It wouldn't sink the boat. It would just make everything real wet, and maybe something would get washed overboard or something. But eventually, I'd have got out into deeper water, and I would have deployed a parachute sea anchor. Or you can heave too. Some boats heave to a lot better than other boats. This boat in particular heaves to very poorly. I have two unstayed masts. This is a cat rig schooner. It's a very strange rig. I have a little jib I can put up, but I could heave to with the little jib and like my mainsail under minimal conditions, maybe 15 knots or something if I just want to slow the boat down. But I'm not going to be able to heave to in 50 gusting 70. So you can heave to, that is one way to do it, or in my case I'll deploy a parachute sea anchor. And a parachute sea anchor is basically what it sounds like. It looks like a parachute, like a traditional parachute, a circular type. You deploy it off the front of your boat, and it basically grabs the water and holds you bow in to the waves. Now, there's a couple different ways you can deploy it. You can deploy it off the side of your boat, sort of angled off, about 50 degrees off the side of your boat. That's the Lynn and Larry Pardee version of doing it. I don't do that. I find it easiest just to run it straight off the bow. There's less things that can go wrong. I'll get into all that stuff at a little later date and time, or maybe later this episode. I don't know. We'll see. But I would deploy this parachute sea anchor. I don't sail without a parachute sea anchor. I've spent about a month on a parachute sea anchor altogether. If you add up all the different times. First time I was ever on one was in the Bay of Biscay, off of France and Spain. And I was in a Force 9, Force 8, Force 9. It just was nasty weather just for 5-6 days. And eventually I just got tired of it. And the last Force 9 was coming. And, you know, I was like, I just got tired. So I threw out the parachute sea anchor. And I was kind of curious to see how it worked anyways. And I had a good time. I had a wind generator that was going like hell, but producing a lot of power. I actually watched the perfect storm. I thought it was kind of funny to watch the perfect storm in a storm. Why not, you know? And, I slept like a baby, and Force 9 passed, and, you know, 12 hours later or 15 hours later, whatever, I turned the engine on and went back. You have to get a trip line. You can't retrieve them without a trip line. You got to have a trip line with, like, a buoy, something, a fender or something attached to it. You try to retrieve a parachute sea anchor without one, and it's impossible. The sea anchor turns upside down under your boat in the last, like, 15 feet, and tries to suck your bow down. It's a bad situation. You got to have a trip line. You also have to have a lot of line when using a parachute sea anchor. You need to have, I think they call for a 5-to-1, 6-to-1. Basically, if you got a 30-foot boat, 10-to-1, I believe it. If you got a 30-foot boat, you need 300 feet of line. And I think 300 feet of line is like the minimum. So that's something like 100 meters, roughly. I would use 600 feet as a minimum. And they say you want to try to set it up in a certain way, in a wave pattern. No, don't worry about all that stuff. You just deploy it with as much line as you have and chafe gear and use chain at the boat. I'll get back into that in a minute after the commercial break. I'll explain it a little more. Talk to you in a minute.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea, from boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford, sitting in my aft cabin of Alt in some fjord in about 77 north, 77 and a half north, something along these lines, in Greenland, waiting out a bunch of bad weather so we can get back to work and get back to doing research. So I was just talking about parachute sea anchors. And so as I was saying, that you want to have a lot of line when you deploy these things, something like 10-to-1. Of your boat length. So if your boat length is 30 feet, you want 300 feet of line. I do a 600 foot minimum personally. I also use chain at the boat side. So now, different companies argue about this sort of thing. Ferrentino is the company I use. Ferrentino parachute sea anchor. That's like the original parachute sea anchors, and it's, in my opinion, it's the best. It's sort of like the Cadillac of parachute sea anchors. I've used a lot of different types of parachute sea anchors. Going around the Americas, I used a different brand, and the problem is that it had a lot of webbing attached to the parachute itself, like 30 pieces of lengths of webbing. And when I'd pull the thing back in, it would become a tangled mess. You know, like all the webbing. It'd be like a bowl of spaghetti. It's like trying to untangle a bowl of spaghetti. And it doesn't seem like it should become a tangled mess. I mean, it should come on board and everything should be okay. But somehow, they always got wrapped around each other and all knotted up. And then you're like untangling your parachute sea anchor. And it's just a nightmare to do it. So the nice thing about this Ferrentino one is it has this ring, and it only has much less thicker lines, but less lines that connect to the parachute, and they don't get tangled. So you don't got to worry about having to unwrap your parachute sea anchor like you're untangling a bowl of spaghetti, which of course is great. So they actually say to do it differently than I do it. But they say you should put chain on the parachute sea anchor side. I like to put chain on the boat side. So let's say I was letting out a parachute sea anchor. I'll put the parachute sea anchor out, and ideally you do this before the weather picks up. So going around the Americas, for instance, I ended up spending 10 days on a parachute sea anchor north of the Bering Straits. And it was just really nasty. It was still the Arctic Ocean. I had two really nasty systems come back to back, and it was actually a huge area of shallow water, this huge bay. I can never pronounce it properly. It was like Kuzukbee Sound. I don't know. I'm sure I'm destroying the. I mean, this is my own country, and I'm not. I don't know how to properly pronounce it. But you know, it was a big trip when I went around the Americas. I went a lot of places. I went through a lot of different bodies of water. I can't remember every single one of them. But anyways, it's just north of Bering Straits. So I saw the weather coming, and so before it got bad, I put out the parachute sea anchor and rode out this storm. It's a lot harder to do it when the storm is coming. Now, if you don't have any weather forecasts, the ocean typically doesn't always happen, but will typically tell you when heavy weather is coming by giving you some strong, brief gusts. So you'll be sailing along, and I've crossed the Atlantic before without any weather forecasts, and I've done a lot of deliveries without weather forecasts down in the Caribbean and back up, and they're 1,500 mile jumps. So you'll get a strong gust, and it won't last more than a few seconds. It's like a strong puff of wind. And you feel this, and it just doesn't feel right. It just doesn't match the wind that's around you. And maybe you go and look at your barometer, and you know, you're seeing, you know, of course, if you're not getting weather forecasts, you should be paying a lot of attention to your barometer. And you should be setting, there's like a little stationary red needle sort of thing that you can set to the barometric pressure. So you should be adjusting that, you know, every 6 hours at the very least, making sure that you're constantly monitoring barometric pressure. And so you might go over there and look at it, and you might see that the barometric pressure really hasn't changed much. And I've been in gales before where the barometer didn't really start falling until the wind had already picked up considerably. Sort of like, well, you know, thanks, barometer. You know, it's already blowing 35, and now you're starting to drop. So a barometer is important, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, pay attention to it. But just because your barometer hasn't started dropping yet doesn't mean that the weather is or isn't coming, you know. But what is usually a pretty good sign is these puffs, these strong puffs of wind. You'll get one, and then it'll start coming a little more regularly. Typically, that means you got some strong winds coming. That's like the precursor to a gale or a storm. And you'll get the same thing on the other side. Once this gale or this storm passes, you'll still get an occasional strong puff. And so anyways, that's a way to know if you don't get weather forecasts. We live in an era now, ever since, I don't know, 2010, 2011, it's been much easier to get weather forecasts. Now it's even easier, you know, with this Predict Wind offshore program that I use. I mean, it's simple. I can, anytime I want, I can grab a forecast and see exactly what's going on. I can get four different forecasts if I want, so which can be confusing, but. So you want to deploy these parachute sea anchors ahead of time. You know, you want to deploy them before the weather starts, ideally. Or, you know, if the weather has already picked up, it's one of these things that's good to practice. You know, not as much at the dock, but, you know, go out there and practice it. You know, go out in 25 knots and or 20 knots. And practice deploying a parachute sea anchor in your home waters, wherever you're from. You know, it's really, get an idea of what it's like. When I deployed it for the first time, I had a lull in the weather, and so it was only blowing maybe 20 or 25. And that's really ideal. You don't really want to be deploying this thing in a storm. As I said, I use chain on the boat side. So if I were to put out 600 feet, you know, a couple hundred meters, roughly, of line, I would have about 100 feet of that as chain. And I would have that chain on the boat side, not on the parachute sea anchor side. So the chain does two things. It gives this sort of, it adds weight to the line, and it gives sort of a cantering effect. So the last thing in the world you want with a parachute sea anchor is to have shock loading. Shock loading is going to break the line you have attached to your parachute sea anchor. You're going to lose your parachute sea anchor. This happens when the line goes from being taut to having slack in it and to being taut again. So when you get this sort of slack in your line, and then boom, it gets taut, and then boom, it's slack, boom, it's taut, that shock loading is going to break your line to your parachute sea anchor. By having this chain on the boat side, by having this additional weight, you are going to eliminate the slack, because anytime that there's any chance of being slack, the chain will pull it down, eliminating that slack. And the chain does a second thing, which is it reduces the chances of you getting chafe. So it basically eliminates the chances of you getting chafe. So you got this line, this parachute sea anchor line, off the front of your boat, and you know, if it is a line, if you're using like a three-strand line or double braided or mega braid or whatever you're using, there's a lot of tension on that. And you could chafe right through that line, and then now you don't have your parachute. Now you lost your, you know, relatively expensive piece of equipment, and you're no longer you're gonna have to use a different tactic. You're not floating around in this storm. So if you use chain is not gonna chafe through. Now chain might chafe through your boat. You might get some damage from the chain. It might hurt your fiberglass a little bit. It might rub up against your stainless steel bow pulpit or whatever you got up at the front of your boat, and you might get some scratches or something. But, you know, if it comes to a proper storm, let's say it's blowing 50 or 60 knots, and you make it through this storm with just a little bit of scratches to some of your stainless, or a little bit of, you know, a little bit of fiberglass got rubbed off, I mean, you know, big deal. You know, I mean, it's much better off than what could have happened. You know, so that's sort of the basics. So in this case, I would have went out. I would have got hit by this nasty current. If my engine not started, I would have got hit by this nasty current. I would have sailed my way through it, got out in the deeper water away from the current, deployed the parachute sea anchor. Once you're on a parachute sea anchor, you will still drift backwards about a half a knot to a knot. If you're going backwards any faster than that, you don't have a big enough parachute sea anchor. There is basically no such thing as having too big of a parachute sea anchor. So whatever size they tell you should buy the next size up. Like, who cares? You know, the parachute sea, it isn't like a drogue. I'll get into that in a minute and tell you guys why it isn't, what the differences are. But with a parachute sea anchor, you want it to be big. You want it to slow you down. Ideally, you want to be doing about a half a knot going backwards. If you go backwards any faster than about a knot, maybe a knot and a half, you stand the chances of breaking your rudder off. So what could happen is if you're going backwards fast and you're getting thrown backwards by waves, and you know, you're going back two knots, three knots, if your rudder turns sideways for any reason, it could snap right off. And this has happened before. And this has happened both people heaving to, and I've heard it happen with parachute sea anchors. So you want to have a big parachute sea anchor. And the one that I used going around the Americas was made for a 35-foot boat, and the Alban Vega was a 27-foot boat. So I had a much bigger parachute sea anchor than technically I needed. But that's what you want. You know, you want something that's really going to stop you. And you don't want it too small, but you can't really have it too big. That's basically impossible. But just get the next size up. So I would have drifted back. Here, once I got out past the current, there's a couple of islands I would have had to sail in between. It's possible I would have tried to use the lee of these islands, like sail so these islands were blocking the wind a little bit and blocking the wave action, and try to deploy the parachute sea anchor there while I still had some protection from the waves. Eventually, I would have drifted out far enough that I would have lost that protection, but at least it would have helped me do the initial deployment. And I have another maybe 100 miles after that that I could drift before it's an issue. And 100 miles at roughly half a knot to a knot, you can drift for several days before you really get in any kind of danger of winding up on the far shore. I would have actually wound up in Canada. I'd have been blown up on the shore of Ellesmere Island in Canada. But the storm is going to blow out before that. You know, this isn't a winter storm. Nice thing about storms in the summer is they typically come and go pretty quickly. It's unlikely they're going to last more than 24 hours for the most part. I have had them last longer than that. But generally speaking, you know, they got a saying in New England about a summer storm where they come for breakfast and they leave after dinner. You know, and that's pretty typical. You know, it picks up maybe 12 hours, maybe 16 hours, and then it goes away. Don't get me wrong, 12 hours or 16 hours blowing at 50, 60 knots is long enough, plenty long enough to build up some seas. And you don't want to be anywhere near a current. I mean, it's a really dangerous situation to do that. But again, anything is better than being dashed up against those rocks. So yeah, that would have been sort of the line of my strategy had my engine failed, overheated, line got wrapped around a propeller, whatever. I wasn't able to use the engine, or maybe it just wasn't strong enough. Maybe for some reason I even as hard as I was pushing the engine, I was still getting blown back towards that rocky shoreline. Now, let's say your boat gets thrown up against the rocks, all right, and it's getting punched in, stove in by the rocks, it's starting to sink. I could have got into a life raft. But what's the point of that? You know, I mean, if your boat's going to get smashed by the rocks, the life raft is just going to get smashed by the rocks too. And, you know, what are you going to do? You think that the life raft's just going to go up against this cliff and you're going to, like, magically climb this cliff? I mean, you know, you get thrown up against the cliff. The life raft would be, you know, ripped apart into a million pieces and everybody would drown. And that is the worst case scenario. So I sail out, pass the current, deploy the parachute sea anchor. Now, a drogue is different than a parachute sea anchor. A drogue is something you deploy off the back of your boat. A drogue, you think about a drogue more like brakes. It's like having brakes for your boat. And drogues have to be the right size. You definitely don't want them too big, and you definitely don't want them too small. If they're too small, they're not going to do anything. Well, they're not going to slow you down nearly enough for it to be effective. If they're too big, they'll slow you down in the trough in between the big waves. You'll slow down, damn near stop you in the trough. And this has happened to me before. And then the next wave will come over and wash over the back of your boat and will try to kick your companionway in. You'll have a wave that just combs like right over your cockpit, filling your cockpit full of water, slamming in your companionway hatches. It's, you know, you have to do everything you can to try to hold up against that pressure. And of course, you know, if you were to stand in your cockpit and start kicking your companionway hatches, it's kicking those slides, the boards that slide in your companionway. I mean, how many times would you have to kick it before you kicked right through it? You know, I mean, now imagine how much stronger a wave is than your leg. So you don't want to present the back of your boat to a big wave. You want to present the front of your boat to a big wave. The front of your boat, the stem of your boat, is one of the strongest parts of your boat. So by using a parachute sea anchor, you're presenting the front of the boat, the stem of the boat, the V shape at the front, to that wave. And, you know, and if you have too big of a drogue, it becomes counterproductive. It becomes a bit dangerous. And I'll tell you guys a story about that here after the commercial break.
Smartest long-tailed catch, you'll find it. Ho, way, ho, why, you must done. She's the lady, say, of the salting times. Clear away the track and let the bull jive run to me. Hey, rig a jig, she's a jaunting free.
We're living our dream.
We're living simply and sustainably aboard a sailboat travelling the world.
We're visiting remote communities and raising awareness about the health of our oceans.
We're trawling the oceans for microplastic particles.
We're checking on the health of coral reefs and phytoplankton populations.
We're monitoring marine mammals and examining synthetic materials in fish.
We're Bass and Jamie Van Jones.
And we're proof that citizen science can save the world.
Hear all about our amazing adventures in salty times every week here on Boat Radio.
Stay salty.
You.
And aboard are the ladies say, clear away the tack and let the boat join run.
I'm Michael John, and each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames, from the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel, to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures. I'll be meeting the people, visiting the places, and boarding the ships that work this mighty, muddy artery. So join me, Michael John, for Tales of the Thames on Boat Radio.
Ah, this is Edward Smith from OPA Racing.
This is Ken Little, president of GLOC, Performance Boat Challenge.
Hi, this is Frank Pillsbury with Marine Max and the DFW International Boat Show in Dallas, Texas.
We explore all kinds of boating topics on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Hi, I'm Captain Bob May. We get underway, making way, Saturday evenings here on Boat Radio.
This is Heather Lohe, Director of Membership for Boat US. Thanks for listening to Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show.
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly from Skipper's Review, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to Ocean Research Project. I am Matt Rutherford, sitting here in the aft cabin of my boat. It's raining outside. It's coming down in sheets. It's blowing probably, 30, 35 knots, which isn't that bad. Isn't that bad considering what it's been doing. And we're just waiting for this weather to pass so we can get back out and doing research. So, drogues. Parachute sea anchor is something you deploy off the front of your boat, while a drogue is something you deploy off the back of your boat. Now, a lot of people get this mixed up. Even Bowditch gets this mixed up. Bowditch is like a book that has all the official terms for everything sailing. Even in Bowditch, they call a drogue a parachute sea anchor. It's not... I mean, it's pretty incredible that Bowditch would get this screwed up, but a lot of people do. A lot of people don't know the difference between the two. So you think about a parachute sea anchor as something to stop the boat and put the nose of your boat up into the wind and up into the waves. And basically you use that, it's a defensive tactic, and you use that as a way to weather a storm or a gale without having, it's inactive. Basically, you deploy this system the way I mentioned earlier, and then you go down and you read a book and you go to bed. You know, you get up every once in a while and check on things, but for the most part, once the system is deployed, there's nothing else to do. So you might as well try to just go to bed. It's not going to be comfortable. It's, you know, riding out a storm on a parachute sea anchor is like being on anchor in the worst anchorage you've ever been in, with like, you know, crazy breaking waves. I mean, your boat's getting tossed around. And some boats have a tendency to sail on anchor. Some boats squirm, you know, they move around a lot on anchor. You can use a very, very, very small, very heavy-duty steadying sail that you can put on your backstay and make it really, really tight. You can even use a block of wood, like a triangular-shaped piece of wood that you clip onto your backstay. That'd probably actually be a better thing, to be honest. And then this way, if your boat has this tendency of sort of getting squirrely on anchor, this will act as a steadying sail to keep you better into the wind. So if your boat has that tendency, you know, use something. Get a piece of wood. It doesn't have to be very big. You know, you're thinking the winds are going to be blowing 50, 60 knots. I mean, you know, maybe, I don't know, half a meter at its widest and coming down to a V, you know, like a pyramid or something. So anyways, you don't want a drogue to be too big, because as I said, it'll slow you down in a trough. So when I was in the Gulf of Alaska sailing around the Americas, and it was just another gale, you know, there's a lot of gales on that trip, especially in that sort of region. I don't know what it was blowing, maybe 40 knots or something. I decided to use a parachute sea anchor. I hadn't been using it at that point, so I figured I'd give it a go. So I deployed this thing, and this I didn't have money to buy a new parachute sea anchor. I'm sorry, I'd say parachute. I meant to say drogue. I don't know. I'm sick. If I sound like I'm tired right now, it's because I'm sick. I got a cold somehow, and I'm sick. But anyways, I deployed a drogue, and the drogue was for my Pearson 323. I didn't have the money to buy new gear for the trip around the Americas, so I just used whatever I had. So it was too big. So what happened is it worked perfectly fine during the gale. When the wind was blowing, it worked well. But the wind died quickly, and the waves were still there, but the wind was died. So the wind out went down to like 20 knots, but the waves were still like 20 feet. So I stopped in between in the trough. I was getting stopped in between the waves, like damn near completely stopped. And then the next wave would come, and it would kind of crash over the back of my boat, because now I'm presenting my stern to the wave, almost stopped. And the wave would fill my cockpit and then try to kick in my companionway. It would bash up against the slides in my companionway, and it would try to basically kick in my companionway. So I was sitting there holding my companionway on the inside. I don't know if it was a fruitless effort. I mean, if it really wanted to kick in my companionway, it would have. Luckily, it didn't. And I went out there and I pulled in the drogue as fast as I could, which ended up, I don't know if I got an internal hernia or what have I. I ended up pooping blood for the next few days after that. So I guess I pulled something inside myself trying to get this drogue up in a hurry. But as you can imagine, I was sort of freaking out a bit. I mean, I had these waves crashing over the back of my boat. I got to get this drogue up. I didn't want to cut it free. So I pulled the thing so hard that, I don't know, I injured myself and pooped blood for a few days. Yeah, don't get too big of a drogue. Listen to whatever the company. Again, Ferrentino makes a good drogue. They're, you know, I like their drogue because it doesn't spin. Some drogues spin when they're in the water. The one that I had for my Pearson, it spins like a top, and that can cause problems. You have to have two shackles. You have to have a spinning shackle. You have to have one at the drogue and then another one at the bridle. When using a drogue, you should use a bridle, ideally. You don't have to use a bridle, but I personally, I always do. It breaks up the load, first off. When using a drogue, good connection points are your winches. So the winches that you have are probably have backing plates underneath of them. You can use your cleats, but make sure your cleats are well backed. It's the same thing with a parachute sea anchor. Think ahead of time, where am I going to connect this thing to? And wherever you're going to connect it to, make sure you got a good backing plate underneath of it. On the Alban Vega, the boat I took around the Americas, I put a Samson post on my boat, and underneath of it, I put a giant backing plate that was like, I don't know, half a meter by half a meter. Basically, in order to rip the Samson post out of my boat, you'd have had to have ripped the whole front end of my boat off, which luckily never happened. But they claim, the companies that make these parachute sea anchors claim that the amount of load shouldn't be that much more than when you're on anchor. But just make sure you got good backing plates under anything that you're going to connect this parachute sea anchor to, and same with the drogue. So the way that I connect the drogue is with a bridle, and the bridle connects to the winches, my main winches in my cockpit, and then I run them from there through a couple of either really strong blocks or, you know, find a point, because you're going to run it through something else. Run it through by the middle of a cleat, maybe, something else, and it will take a lot of load too, but the main thing taking the load would be the winches. And it's really hard to rip a winch out. I mean, you got to really put some, because like I say, they're meant to take load. They're really well backed. You don't have to use your winches. Now, obviously, if you're using your winches, you're not going to be able to tend your sails. But typically when you're in a storm, you're not going to be tending to your sails much anyways. I just had a little scrap of jib out running downwind, you know, with a little piece of jib. I pulled it out. I like to flatten my jib with a pole, so I have a nice flat piece of jib out there. And I get into all these sort of, you know, that sort of aspect of heavy weather stuff at a different point in time. But yeah, when using a drogue, make sure it's properly sized. Make sure you have good connection points, because there's going to be a lot of load on that drogue. Make sure there's nowhere that it can chafe. Again, you're going to want to test this out in lighter conditions, you know, 20, 25 knot conditions somewhere in your home waters. Go out there and, you know, run this. Make sure nothing's going to chafe anywhere. You can use chafe protection. You know, get some old fire hose, something thick. Connect it anywhere you think you might have chafe. Put some hose so it has to chafe through the hose first. The thing I like about the Ferrentino drogue, first off, it doesn't spin, like I said, but the second thing is it actually has a connection point on the end of it to add weight, which is really nice, because sometimes you want to add weight to a drogue to bury it a little deeper in the water and to give it a little more pull. So if you're in a really, really bad storm and you want to run downwind, and that's the purpose for using these, by the way. I didn't explain that properly, but the whole reason that you use a drogue is because you're running downwind, you're in really big seas. Let's say you're in 25-foot seas, 30-foot seas, you know, 10-meter seas, and you start surfing down these waves. So like in my case, and the first time I ever used a drogue, I was crossing the Atlantic. I was sailing alone across the Atlantic, the northern route, from Maine to Falmouth, England. I was in the middle of the ocean, somewhere up by 48 north, maybe 40 west, and I got hit by a storm. It lasted, it blew about 50 knots for about 70 hours. So it was a big, full, nearly 3-day event. Plenty of time for the seas to become mature. And I started surfing down these waves. I was in a 32-foot boat. You know, it's a little less than 10 meter. And I started surfing down these waves at like 13 knots. And the problem is that you want to maintain control of your vessel. So if you're surfing down waves, and there are a few boats out there that are actually built to surf down waves, but you know, those are a pretty rare breed. Your typical, you know, average monohull is not meant to go over, you know, double its hull speed. Within this train of waves you have, say 25-foot waves, you're going to have smaller waves that are sort of going this way and that, maybe the size of a VW Beetle. And they might be going horizontal or perpendicular. They're sort of zigzagging around. So as you come down one of these big waves, you're now surfing, let's say 13 knots. If one of these smaller waves hits your bow as you're surfing down, you can broach hard. And that's really what you're trying to prevent by using a drogue. You're trying to prevent broaching. Broaching is when your boat turns sideways very quickly to port or to starboard, and it basically loses control. You basically fishtail. You lose control, your boat turns sideways very quickly, and this is a good way to break your rudder off. A lot of different damage can happen under the circumstance, but the number one problem you'll probably find is you'll break your rudder off. This happened to a friend of mine in the Gulf of Alaska last year. He was surfing down waves. He wasn't using a drogue. His boat broached hard in a gale. He broke his rudder off. Now he's beam onto the seas. Another wave came and broke down right on his boat, you know, went right down his companionway, put a whole bunch of water inside his boat. He was taking on water because his rudder shaft was all bent and screwed up. The boat was sinking, and he had to abandon ship. And he lost his boat, and he didn't have insurance for it. He lived on the boat. He lost everything. So what you're trying to do by using a drogue is prevent yourself from surfing down these waves. You're trying to remain control of the vessel. So in that situation, in the Atlantic, on a 32-foot boat in this 50-knot storm that lasted 70 hours. By deploying a drogue, I went from surfing out of control, basically, at 12, 13 knots, to going about 6, 7 knots. And it made all the difference in the world. Now, actually, I said earlier, this is the first time I used the drogue. Actually, it was the second time I used the drogue. I used it one other time before that on the same crossing in Tropical Storm Cristobal. But I was fore-reaching with a drogue. In this case, I was running with a drogue. Typically, 9 out of 10 times, or 99 out of 100 times, you use a drogue. It's going to be when you're surfing down waves. You got the waves behind you, the wind behind you, and you're not surfing dead down waves. You want to be at an angle. So you want to be at like 15 to 20 degrees of an angle. You don't want to be going straight down the wave, because that's how you can pitch pull. Pitch pulling is when a wave picks you up and you somersault, and that's a horrible thing to happen. So ideally, you're going down these waves at about 15 to 20 degree angle to the wave itself. Then you put your drogue out and you slow down, in my case, to 6-7 knots, and you know, it made a world of difference. It made all the difference in the world. I mean, it was just, all of a sudden, the boat was under control. I just had a little bit of jib out. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching the rest of this sort of storm pass by. I used a monitor wind vane. I wasn't out there steering the boat. I let the wind vane do it. And but there was enough control. I had a bridle. I had the drogue on a bridle. And I needed a bridle because I had a wind vane on the back of my boat. If you have a wind vane on the back of your boat, you have to have a bridle, or else it's going to rub up against the wind vane. The first time I used it earlier in that transatlantic was Tropical Storm Cristobal. I got my ass kicked by Cristobal. Sort of embarrassing. I wish it was named Chuck or Charlie or something. Cristobal sounds like a French fairy or something. But anyways, I got beat up by Cristobal. But it blew about 60 knots. But it was fast moving. It was one of these, it comes for breakfast and it leaves after dinner. And the wind's picking up out there. Anyways, comes for breakfast, leaves after dinner sort of scenarios. And actually, another single-hander about 50 miles away had to abandon ship in this same tropical storm. And my dad heard about it, and my dad thought it was me who had to abandon ship. And he called the Coast Guard, and I was talking to Herb, southbound 2 on the single sideband. He's retired now, but back when he did it. And Herb was like, "Matt, you need to call your father." And there was like 20 other boats listening. I felt so embarrassed. But anyways, it's a pretty silly story. I did something called forereaching. Forereaching is when you basically are close-hauled. So you're going into the waves. I was doing that because I was trying to get away from the center of this tropical storm. It made more sense for me to try to go that direction than to try to run off. And so I was forereaching, but I was still going too quickly. Even with a little scrap of third reef main and a little bit of jib, I was still moving too fast. I was flying off of one wave and pounding into the next wave. So by deploying a drogue, it again slowed me down to about 6 knots, 7 knots, and it was much less pounding and it was much more under control. And so I was forereaching with a drogue. I've never heard of anybody forereaching with a drogue, but it works well. But nevertheless, I don't go sailing without a drogue and a sea anchor and without all the gear and equipment you need to properly set it up. I think these are fundamental pieces of equipment for sailing in the open ocean. You don't necessarily need it if you're just coastal cruising, because you can always duck in if bad weather is coming. But I always bring it, unless I'm delivering a boat. Of course, when I deliver boats back and forth to the Caribbean, they never have any of this equipment because the owners, what are the owners care? They don't buy this stuff. They expect you to deal with that out in the ocean. You can check out the website. There are videos, there's blogs, and you can always make a donation via PayPal. We can't do our research without help from people. So thanks again for listening to the radio show, and talk to you next week.
Kuya Nakase, Kuya Nagurok, Kuya Naikilase, Kuya Nasuak!